Kaffee in seiner besten Form. Mit Cubo wird jeder Kaffee auf Knopfdruck zum Genussmoment. Denn mit der neuen Cubo One Kapselmaschine von Chibo genießt du feinsten Spitzenkaffee aus besonderen Anbaugebieten. Vollmundige Aromen dank innovativer Press-Brew-Technologie und über 17 Sorten Kaffee für jeden Geschmack. Erlebe Premium-Kaffee schon ab 29 Euro. Entdecke jetzt die Cubo Kapselmaschinen in deiner Chibo-Filiale und auf chibo.de.
Stu does America.
Get your merch at stewdoesmerch.com. Use the promo code STU10. You'll save 10% off your entire order. If you're not a Blaze TV subscriber, you can check out the show for free on YouTube, youtube.com/stewdoesamerica. Be sure to subscribe to the channel and hit the bell for notifications. We're doing live broadcasts. We did it all throughout election season. I think I'll still mix some more in because I just like doing them. So maybe we can do a Q&A or whatever you want to hear about coming up here in the next week or so. How do we remember those who fought in World War II? It's Veterans Day. Are we losing their stories? Rishi Sharma is going to join us with his new effort to protect our history. This is really important stuff. Donald Trump is setting up his next cabinet for his term coming up. I'll tell you who kind of made the squad so far. There's a bunch of names floating around. We're going to start by doing the left's post-election meltdown. And I don't know about you. I spent the weekend celebrating. First of all, most importantly, obviously, I was celebrating the Philadelphia Eagles defeating the Dallas Cowboys in destructive fashion. That was, of course, the best part of the week. But second best part of the week was the election results. And I was sitting back thinking about what a wonderful, wonderful week it was. It really was great. And then I was like, how do I celebrate this? There's a lot of ways to do it. A new heroin habit, for one. But no, I decided to go a different direction. Just soak in, directly shooting into my veins, all of the post-election meltdown stuff I could find. Because it's just so freaking fun. It's so enjoyable to sit back and watch the left completely just melt down. And look, I am a person who is going to warn you a little bit that almost always in situations like this, 2 years later, we're sitting after a midterm and going, oh, gosh, what happened? So the first like 100 days are really important once Trump takes over. He's got to get a lot of this stuff done really quickly. That being said, let's worry about that like tomorrow or next week or another day. Let's just celebrate the wallowing if we could. First of all, let me tell you a couple of quick election updates. The House still looks pretty good for Republicans. Does look like they're going to get over 218, might end 220 or 221 in that general vicinity. Not a very big majority. In fact, it's a very small majority, but they should get there. The Kerry Lake race in Arizona, I don't think Kerry's going to be able to quite get there. Going to lose, I think, and it's going to, you know, certainly a very close election, but I don't think she's going to quite get over there. And Gallego is going to be their senator, who he's absolutely terrible. And then we also have this one, which I don't know, to me is already called, but Democrats are holding out hope in the Pennsylvania Senate race as Republicans declare victory. And to be clear, the Associated Press called this race over. This is not Republicans declaring victory. But Bob Casey, I mean, shamefully, is sitting there trying to wait and hope, you know, to push every single one of his buttons to try to work out a few extra tens of thousands of votes. I mean, he's trailing. He's significantly behind when it comes to raw vote numbers. He's just hoping against hope. Now, I will say, if you're a candidate that is in the losing side, you have a right to be able to do all your legal challenges. You go through that process. So I can't, you know, say anything terrible about him, but it's quite clear he's not going to win when it comes down to it. We will see if that turns around. But, you know, that's the only thing that's really left to resolve. A few House seats. You got a couple Senate seats that are officially maybe completely done, but are basically done. And, you know, there's some lower seats there as well. The bottom line to all this, though, is that the left has had a really bad day. They were not happy about this. They were panicking, and they've gone to now every single thing. I love this because how often did they call the right election deniers? They said that they will come up with any theory they can to support their lies about the election. The big lie. It was the big lie back in 2020. Well, of course, as you might guess, a bunch of people online now think that the election was stolen from the Democrats for the Republicans. PolitiFact even points out, no, 20 million Democratic votes didn't disappear, and there's no evidence the 2024 election was stolen. There is a Pants on Fire post that talks about, I love this, I spent my career in computer security in the Navy and the USA. I'm beginning to believe that our election was massively hacked and just happened a few weeks ago in the Republic of Georgia. Think Elon Musk, Starlink, Peter Thiel, Steve Bannon, Michael Flynn, Vladimir Putin. 20 million Democratic votes don't just disappear on their own. Now, let me go into this on a future show. The fact that 2 days after the election, your total vote count is down by 20 million might seem like a big scandal. Not really. A lot of these votes take a long time to count. A lot of them still have to be counted. Not to mention the last one you won and this one you're losing. So the fact that your vote total would go down would be kind of natural. But we'll get into, maybe we'll take that another day because there's other reasons for that. But I will say it's fascinating to watch all of them now do what they accused us of doing all of this time. We were the election deniers for 4 years. Now they can deny the election and no one seems to care whatsoever. More than half of voters for Harris want to relocate following the Trump win. Of those surveyed, 44% would like to move, but probably won't. Well, 5% say they will definitely move, and another 5% said they probably will. So more than half. Those who would like to move but probably won't cited personal finances, family, and community ties as reasons they will stay in place. Of the 10% planning to move or seriously considering it, 90% are looking into moving to another country, with the top choices being Canada, the United Kingdom, and Mexico. California, New York, Colorado were among the top three choices for those considering a move to another state. So that's a little bit different. Moving to another state is not like, oh, gosh, I'm leaving the country. That's like, hey, I'm sick of all this liberalism. Let me move out of these liberal states. That's certainly a different situation. According to the survey, the top three reasons Harris voters want to relocate are concerns that a federal abortion ban will be enacted and an increase in racial inequality and progressive rights will be overturned. I don't really want to help people who would think that way. Like, if you are the type of person who's like, I'm going to move out of here because a federal abortion ban is going to pass, which, I don't think it's going to, but that's a whole other situation. But even if you think that's the reason, I don't mind you moving out of the country, frankly. Bye-bye. We'll see you later. I'm not going to force you to leave, but I'm not going to cry about it either. Let's be honest about it. That being said, if you really are worried about the reason why you're worried about potentially moving is because of a federal abortion ban, you could just leave when you need the abortion. These people are not that bright. You want to fly into Mexico and get one of those jobs? Go for it. And good luck with that. I don't know that you'll be coming home, frankly, considering the Mexican medical situation down there. But generally speaking, just fly out and take a nice little abortification now overseas. Go fly somewhere else and you can escape the little Handmaid's Tale country we have for you here to go to the paradise of Mexico for all your medical treatments. Good luck with all of that. Classes have been canceled at Harvard, Penn, and Columbia over the Trump win. The Harvard Crimson reported the school's dean, Rakesh Karuna, told students, let yourself feel a bunch of emotions about how this is going to impact us in the future and listen to other people and how they feel about it too. Now, of course, you can't listen to all other people because some of them might like it. So don't listen to those people, but listen to other people who also have other bitches and complaints about the election results and the democracy they hold so dear. Maybe they don't like it because of gender issues or racial issues. Whatever it is, please make sure to listen to other people who hate Donald Trump too, but don't listen to people who like him. Those people are happy and you won't like them. Citing internal emails, the Washington Free Beacon reported that a Columbia professor granted students permission to skip class. I hope you are hanging in there. I have been thinking of you over the past few days. The Columbia professor reportedly wrote to her students, if you don't feel up for class, absences today will be excused. How soft are we? Look, I have to come back. You know, if the Eagles, who were the heavy favorites yesterday, Dallas seems to be just throwing in the towel on the season. But if the Cowboys won the game yesterday, and there was a time I was kind of thinking it might happen, the Eagles looked like crap in the first half, I would have had to come in here and suck it up. And all the Cowboys fans would have tortured me over it, and it would have sucked, and then I would have been over it. That's how you do it. You deal with it. You deal with life. You don't run away from it all the time. A professor at Columbia University's sister school, Barnard College, allegedly offered students a chance to replace an exam on which they performed poorly in recognition of the increased stress that some of you might be feeling because of the election results. I will offer to replace your midterm exam 2 grade with your final exam grade, if better, a Barnard professor reportedly wrote to students. It's embarrassing. Just take the test and do it. What does Donald Trump have to do with your test? If Donald Trump is in your head so much, we have a fundamental problem with our system. And this part I would agree with many of the liberals on, because right now they're feeling it, right? Like, they're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe Donald Trump is going to do all these bad things to me. It's how I felt when Joe Biden was the nominee, when he wound up winning, or when Kamala Harris was close to winning. I was like, gosh, this person could really affect my life. What do you say we team up? Wonder Twin powers activate and take away some of the power from the executive branch, from Washington completely. What do you say? Let's do it right now. We'll take a little power away and then let Donald Trump can go through and he can try to implement his agenda. And you might not like it. I'm probably going to like it a lot more than you. That's okay. But at the end of the day, neither one of us are going to have horror nightmares about what might happen under a presidency that can't really touch our lives all that directly. That's the whole design of the country. You guys have been screwing that up for about 100 years. But generally speaking, the whole point of this was you weren't really supposed to think about this stuff every day. I like the fact that you come here and listen to the show every day. Don't get me wrong. But generally speaking, the federal government is supposed to have a very small impact on your day-to-day life. Unfortunately, we are now in a position where no matter who wins, it has a big impact on your everyday life. And that's not healthy. It's not healthy for a country, certainly one that was built on the foundations like America. Now, a Yale psychiatrist is urging MSNBC viewers to shun Trump voting family members over the holidays. Yale University's child psychiatry fellow Dr. Amanda Calhoun dug into the issue of post-election crises on the LGBTQQ 2AI plus community with MSNBC's Joy Reid. So if you're talking about someone who Joy Reid invited on as a guest, it's like you're stamping the word insane on your forehead, if that's you. There is a societal push that if someone is in your family, they are entitled to your time. And I think the answer is absolutely not. So if you're going through a situation where you have family members or you have close friends who you know have voted in ways that are against you, that are against your livelihood, then it is like, you mean like if someone voted for Kamala Harris and you happen to be in the oil and gas industry, for example, then it's completely fine to not be around those people and to tell them why, to say, I have a problem with the way you voted because it went against my livelihood and I'm not going to be around for you this holiday. I need to take some space for me. Anyone says that to you, your response is only the only acceptable response. And I don't want to run your life for you, but there's only one actual response to that. It is one word long and it is good. You can add in, if you want a little extra flavor, get out. Max 3 words is all you need for that one. After Trump's win, some women are considering the 4B movement. Now, you might not know what the 4B movement is. I will be honest with you, I did not know what the 4B movement is, but you're probably not gonna have a problem with this one. This is basically from Korea, South Korea. Yeah, North Korea, they don't have any Bs. The South Korean movement of four no's is the way it translates. Like, you're gonna say no to four different things. Those no's are dating, marriage, sex, and children. Young liberal women across TikTok and Instagram are discussing and sharing movement about the South Korean feminist movement in which straight women refuse to marry, have children, date, or have sex with men. These women say they are enraged and fed up after a majority of their male counterparts voted for a candidate who was found liable and for sexual abuse and whose appointment of 3 conservative Supreme Court justices led to the overturning of national abortion rights protections. I love the word protection. Every single time, notice the language. Every single time we're talking about abortion lately, it's protections. Now, you might find it weird if you happen to be a baby in a womb that this law is protecting you all that much, but those are protections, remember. In response, they say they're swearing off men and encouraging others around the country not to join them. Now, I've seen many of the women who are pledging to do this, and they're not going to have an issue swearing off men. Men seem to have sworn off them long ago. Not exactly what you'd say is the most attractive part of our society. Really, a strange dichotomy has been created here. A chasm, if you will, between, like, you notice, like, in college, the women that you would never, I mean, we'd be afraid, honestly, they're going to punch you in the face. Like, just women that do not look, let's say, attractive. On one side, and then the other side, you're seeing, like, these, like, sorority videos where they're all dancing in front of their sorority rooms. They're all looking really, really good, and they're all what you would kind of think of as traditional American ideals. Look, there's two sides to that. Which side do you want to be on? You want to be on the side of the people with with the tattoos and the boots and the lip piercings and the shaved hair and the people, telling you they're not going to have sex with you even though you didn't ask? Or you want to be on the sorority sister side? I don't know. I mean, I just feel like confident in our side of that argument. But that's just me. Women are furious about Trump's win, and they're starting the Matka movement, which glorifies poisoning men. They asked for it, we are told. Women online have taken to the filming ghoulish murder fantasy videos in which they romanticize lacing men's beverages with deadly poison as a justifiable response for fears about abortion rights under a second Donald Trump presidency. Many of these videos have been viewed millions of times on X or TikTok and feature young women fiendishly grinning as they adulterate a cup of tea or other drink with an unknown substance. Some of the women have dubbed the videos part of the Make Aqua Tofana Great Again Matka movement, a nod both to President-elect Trump's campaign slogan, Make America Great Again, and ancient killer Julia Tofana, who has been adopted as the Disturbed group's heroine. Tofana, who was a 17th century Italian woman who sold her poison to wives who wished to dispatch their abusive husbands, resulting in the deaths of more than 600 men. I guess that's okay, right? Seems totally fine to you want to poison your husband for voting in a way you didn't like because maybe the husband didn't want you to abort his kid. Okay, I mean this is where we are. This is the America that we have. This has been sort of a glorious weekend to watch all these people flail, but I guess on the other side of that, you don't necessarily want to be poisoned. We probably shouldn't be encouraging such a thing. And this is a little bit better, I suppose, on that scale. Americans are feeling anxious, so they're doom spending. People are, they're so anxious, they're helping out Donald Trump's potential economy. All of this, and you know, this is all on the heels of what the left is doing constantly with just warning you of these terrible outcomes that could come. Remember, Donald Trump is Hitler. He's a fascist dictator. He's going to punish all of his enemies. He's going to imprison people when they say bad things about him. He's going to put gay people in camps or something. All of these crazy things. It's sort of under the giant umbrella of what I call the Cameron Diaz principle. Now, this goes back to 2004. Wall Street Journal has the quote in here from this piece in 2004. The other campaign, it is called by Catherine Sipe. But this brings me back to the good old days. Perhaps nascent voters should be encouraged to vote mentally, though through actually informing themselves before voting physically. And anyone telling others to get to the polls might practice a few mental exercises first. This could avoid fiascos like Cameron Diaz's announcement on Oprah's Voting Party show that if you think rape should be legal, then don't vote. Because if George W. Bush is reelected, he's going to make rape legal. Wasn't really a priority of term number one, but we assume term number two was when he was going to legalize rape. Now, you may be interested to hear that this did not occur. In fact, it also did not occur under Donald Trump. But all of these things are the kind of scaremongering tactics of the left. They want you to panic so dramatically, because if you panic, maybe you'll listen to them next time. And look, as I said, 2 years is a long time. The first year, they'll get some stuff passed. Maybe they'll get a reconciliation bill, get a little tax cut, whatever is going on here in this first year. The second year, there's going to be, unless they somehow luck out, you're going to have a very small majority in both the House and the Senate. And honestly, like, there's going to be flakes that kind of are in districts that are worried about their reelection. And they will pass on whatever Donald Trump wants to push through. You've got about 6 months to get this done. Everyone gets scared in that election year. 2025 is going to be the year where Donald Trump's going to get a lot of his agenda through, if he gets it through at all. And once 2026 comes and that election comes, the most likely outcome is that Donald Trump loses the House, possibly the Senate, and who knows what else, right? Like, who knows what power or cachet or what else he's lost over this time. The reason I bring that up now, not to freak you out too much, but to say that you need to play this game as if that is an election loss. You need to plan for 2026 to be a loss and 2026 to be not particularly productive. Everything you want to get done needs to come in 2025. And in fact, probably in the first half of 2025. If you wait, the longer you wait, the more you drag this out, the more likely that nothing gets done. So whatever your priorities happen to be, if you're Donald Trump, you need to push these things through immediately. You need to get on the grind. This is why he's pushing so hard for these recess appointments, so he can fill all these jobs at once and doesn't have to sit around and wait months and months and months and months to get them filled. Then he's going to go through the administrative state and probably get rid of a lot of people he thinks are in the way. Those things need to happen quickly. Because if you wait too long, you're then in 2026, and all of a sudden you've got 14 Republican House members that are in competitive elections and don't want to pass any of your bills. So you got to move on this stuff quickly and assume that in 2026 you're going to lose control of one or both of these houses of Congress. That's just the way it works. Typically, even if you're having a solid presidency, usually that first midterm is a disaster. It has been for almost everybody. Even the great Barack Obama, whose first midterm season, his first midterm election, was the Tea Party wave election, the biggest wave election in a century. It's really hard to stop these things once they begin. And look, Donald, even the great Joe Biden, founder of Bidenomics, even lost the House during his first midterm election. So act as if you're out of time before you begin. That's the only way to move forward. We'll get into more of his transition plans and appointment plans coming up here in a little bit. Hillsdale College is offering more than 40 free online courses in the most important and enduring subjects. You can learn about the works of C.S. Lewis, the stories in the books of Book of Genesis, the meaning of the U.S. Constitution, the rise and fall of the Roman Republic, the history of the ancient Christian church with Hillsdale's online college courses. And they're all free. So that's kind of great, right? The economy may be turning up a little bit right now, but still, when they're free, they're free. And that's kind of nice. I personally recommend signing up for Marxism, Socialism, and Communism. This is a brand new online course, unlike anything Hillsdale has produced before. Over the course of 6 documentary style episodes, you'll hear from Hillsdale's professors of history, politics, and economics as they look at Marx's life and writings, the misery and the brutality of the Soviet Union, and the atrocities of communist China, plus the proliferation of cultural Marxism in America. I got to do this one. I'm recommending it to you because I'm going to take it myself. I'm really excited to learn even more about this because Hillsdale, first of all, you're going to get really, really good information, but they're going to go really deep and probably tell you a bunch of things you've never heard before. Hillsdale.edu/Stu is the place to go to enroll right now. Hillsdale.edu/Stu. There's no cost and it's easy to get started. Hillsdale.edu/Stu. Check it out now. Register. Take the class along with me. It's Hillsdale.edu/Stu.
Sehr gut, sehr gut, sehr gut.
Sehr gut?
Wieso Steuer ist sehr gut? Das sagen ganz viele.
Cool, wer sagt das?
Stiftung Warentest, Computerbild, Focus Money, Chip, Finanztipp, such dir was aus.
Mega, aber das ist doch bestimmt kompliziert.
Nö, einfach Foto von der Lohnsteuerbescheinigung machen und fertig.
Klingt sehr gut.
Ist sehr gut. Hol dir dein Geld zurück mit Wieso Steuer.
All World War II veterans are in their 90s and 100s. The youngest combat veteran from World War II is 97. Now is the time to make sure their stories are documented forever. But preserving these heroes on camera is one challenge. Sharing them with the world, inspiring and influencing younger generations is another. We have an ambitious goal. We want to get every single World War II veteran an eyewitness testimony on camera, preserved forever. That is why we need your help. We are offering your organization the opportunity to stand alongside us on this important and vital mission. We have so much work to do to get these heroes on camera, and time is of the essence.
It's really an amazing effort. I'm joined now by Rishi Sharma, a YouTuber, a World War II veterans advocate, and you can be sure to check out his GoFundMe right now. Remember World War II Project at GoFundMe.com/250WW2Heroes. We'll give it to you one more time here at the end, so check that out. I think you're going to want to be involved in this. Rishi, thanks so much for coming on the show. Great to see you.
Thank you so much for this opportunity and for that introduction. It's really an honor to be and talking with a fellow patriot, someone who truly cares more about this country than himself. I'm a big fan of your program.
I'm such a huge fan of your work. I think you know that, Rishi. You've done such incredible things already. Can you kind of take people back, those who don't know your story, maybe have not seen your stuff before, take people back to how this all started?
So basically, my family's immigrated from India to the United States. I was born and raised in Southern California, as you can tell by my tan. But growing up in the United States, especially in Southern California, it's such an idyllic childhood. Being in a middle-class family, you have all your needs met, and you get to do really nice things and have a really nice life in a safe community. But I traveled to India many times growing up, and to see that contrast, obviously, thank God, you know, my family in India, you know, are quite well-to-do, but still, there's so much stark when it comes to the poverty. And for me as a young boy, trying to grapple with why do we have it so good in America where other countries halfway across the world can't even come close? And as I got older, I realized that the reason we have such a beautiful country and the reason we have so many freedoms and opportunities is because of the bloodshed and sacrifice that has been paid time and time again by our veterans, specifically the World War II veterans, who quite literally saved the world. I mean, it's not hyperbole to say that people that look like me would not exist if it was not for these World War II veterans. You know, we don't fit the Aryan superhuman, you know, Hitler's ideology. Same thing, the Japanese, they had their own racial theories. And so I take it very personally that 429,000 young men during the Second World War from the U.S. sacrificed their entire existence so that people like me and my family and millions of other people get to wake up in a world in which our homes are not bombed out. We can go up to anyone and say whatever we want without any fear of repercussion. We get to dream about our lives 80 years from you now. And so that all was going in the back of my head when I was in high school. And I eventually just said, I want to meet some of these men in the flesh. And so I eventually rode my bike. I rode my bike to a local retirement community. And I walked to the front desk and I asked a perfectly innocuous question, or so I thought, to the receptionist. I said, could I please meet some World War II heroes? And she had no idea what to do with me, but she had me speak to the director. And he was so happy to see a young person voluntarily, you know, go into the community, not being dragged by their parents. And so he says, you know, what I'm going to do is I'm going to introduce you to all the World War II veterans we have personally. So he introduced me to 25 different World War II veterans that day. And they all agreed to do the interview. I knew that I couldn't just say I want to hang out, you know, with 95-year-old men. I had to, you know, have a reason. And so I wanted to interview them. And I went home that night. I rode my bike home, and then I basically got on my knees and I cried to my mom, and because I felt the weight of the world was on my shoulders, that all these men, these heroes, had agreed to have their stories documented, and it's now my responsibility. And, you know, God bless her. She got a 500 camera kit from Costco that day, and I started to go to that retirement community every day after school for a couple months, and I started to really hear these incredible stories that you don't read about in history books or see on the television programs, but it's the real deal. And so that really is what got me going, and I kept doing it. Eventually, we got some local news coverage, which led to national news coverage, and I hit the road right after I graduated high school, so it's hard to say it, but I've been interviewing World War II veterans for almost half my life now. I've interviewed 2,600 veterans across all 50 states, Canada, the UK, Australia, New Zealand, France, Belgium. I don't take an income. This is all volunteer. I mean, I literally live out of the car to afford this. And the veterans are given copies for free for them and their families. We share these testimonies with schools plus universities. And then we, as you mentioned earlier, we have a YouTube channel where we try to make the general public aware that the freedoms we have come at a price. And I'm sorry for monopolizing this. Once I get started, I just keep going.
No, it's such an incredible story. We'll tweet out a link to the YouTube page, make sure people can get to it. And I can't overstate how important this work is that you're doing. I mean, we get these broad strokes of history. We know these big names. We know these people who are generals and maybe, you know, specific award winners. But there's so many people that did incredible things. And I don't know if you've found this, Arishi, as you've gone through this process, but it seems like a lot of the people from that era in particular, while they did incredible things, aren't ones to even talk to their families about it. Many of these stories haven't even been told at all outside of these people's own heads, and you're bringing them out. Is that a common thing you run into?
You're absolutely right. I often say that I have three things in my favor, and good looks is not one of them. I'm the same age the veterans were when they were on the front lines. I do a lot of research before each interview so that I can talk shop, you know, because it's tough enough for them to talk about the most difficult days of their life, but it's even tougher if they have to stop every 5 minutes and explain the difference between a mortar or what a machine gun did or what one unit did over here. That way, if you know the background, they can just tell their stories. But to your point, the most important thing I have in my favor is that I'm not related to any of these veterans. And it's very obvious, obviously, with the way, you know, I look to them. And so they're able to, it's almost like a cathartic process. They're able to finally share things that they've held up for 75, 80 years because they don't worry about me judging them. It's not like I'm going to run into them at the grocery store the next day. And I think it gives them comfort to know that at least there's someone else out there in the world who understands a little bit of what it was like for them to see their friends getting killed or to have to kill the enemy. And that's a really important point. You know, video games and movies today kind of make it so that World War II and killing is not that big of a deal, and it's kind of just a superficial thing. We're talking about a generation who are really men and women of God who have very strong faiths, and that's what makes it that much more remarkable, in my opinion, that these are people with such strong convictions who still were willing to put themselves in a position to have their innocence stolen, so that you and I don't even ever have to imagine what it's like to kill someone. I mean, they have carried that burden for us. And I mean, that's what makes me so proud that I get to identify as an American. And I'm bewildered when I see people, I'm 27 now, to see people my age, it's almost like they're ashamed the way they use the word American, the protests that you see on the college campuses. And that's why I'm really excited about this upcoming tour. Starting on January 1st, 2025, I'm going to be traveling across all 50 states with the goal of interviewing minimum of five World War II combat veterans per state, which ties in to the 250th anniversary of our nation's founding, which is next year. And I hope to do the whole trip without staying in any kind of I hope to do the whole trip without staying in any kind of sterile hotel room or Airbnbs. I want to rely completely on the generosity of random Americans who are going to let me into their homes and into their lives. I'll be documenting the entire journey because you're not going to find a more charitable, kind, generous nation than the United States of America. The people of what makes America so great are the people, that we are people who are willing to do things for no other reason than it's the right thing to do, who are willing to go fight and die halfway across the world in a town, you know, people can't even pronounce, or on an island they can't even point to on a map, for someone else's liberty. And this American optimism that every day is going to be better than the next, that's something that you won't ever find anywhere else in the world. And it's so important to capture that. And I've experienced that firsthand over my years of traveling the nation. And I'm really hoping to somehow make it into a documentary and make it digestible so that people of all walks of life who look like me, who might not look like me, who have similar political beliefs or who don't have similar political beliefs, can still look in the mirror and say that they're proud to be American. And I have to tell you, my heart soars every time I'm in the presence with one of these heroes, because I feel it's like a little kid getting to meet Superman. Mm. To know that he was willing to do all those things so that people like us could exist on the front lines, it's a really humbling.
Well, Rishi, I can't say enough of all your efforts. I know you always talk about how it's not about you and it's about these veterans, which is, of course, true on Veterans Day more than any other day. But this is a lot of work, I know, and you've dedicated your life to this. If I could appeal to you at home, maybe you've had some good news over the past week. You may have be excited about where the economy might be going. Maybe you have some Bitcoin and you had some profits off of that. Whatever it is, I can't think of another cause that is up to this, because I will say, future history books, they're going to look at all these interviews. They're going to, these stories are going to be written for generations to come because of the work that Rishi is doing. It is incredibly important, and he's dedicated his entire life to this. So if you have the means, please help him out. The GoFundMe page is available now. GoFundMe.com/250WW2Heroes. It's GoFundMe.com/250WW2Heroes. You can help him out on this journey. He's going to do 250. I mean, do we have any idea, Rishi, quickly? I know we're kind of short on time here, but how many World War II heroes are even left? I know you're going for 250, but they're in their 90s at this point. How much time do we have?
So the youngest World War II combat veteran is going to be 97 years old. They're all in their 90s and hundreds. Mm. The last time I looked at the numbers was about 300,000 were left in the entire country. Wow. But that was a few years ago. So the numbers are going to be smaller, but I don't look at them because, you know, I'll tell you, sir, the day we don't have any World War II veterans in our country is going to be a very sad day, because we don't have our moral compass. For so long, they have steered the ship, and we really need their values and wisdom more than ever, and which is why, as you said, it's so important to document this, and any contributions really do help. I really appreciate you mentioning the GoFundMe, and all I can say is God bless you guys, and thank you so much for this opportunity.
I appreciate it. Rishi Sharma, it's GoFundMe.com/250WW2Heroes. Rishi, thanks so much for the work you've done, and thanks so much for coming on the program and talking about it.
You guys have a great day. Thank you.
Unsere Empfehlung für deinen Podcast? Frisches Obst und knackiges Gemüse von Aldi. Immer gut, immer günstig, immer vielfältig. Kurz gesagt, frische für alle. Zum Aldi-Preis. Diese Woche Cespri Sangold Kiwi. Das Stück für nur 55 Cent. Oder dunkle Tafeltrauben. 500 Gramm für nur 1,79 Euro. Entdecke jetzt viele weitere Angebote in deiner Aldi-Nord-Filiale. Und weiter geht's. Einfach lauschen und genießen. Aldi. Gutes für alle.
You know, it's been an interesting few years here at The Blaze. I remember the buzz around this place. Every day you'd come in and there'd be people talking about it. Everyone looking at their phones. Oh my gosh, did you see this? And they would say, oh my gosh, Bitcoin's up to 13,000. It was 14,000. And I remember it got up to 19,000 in 2017. And people were freaking like off the walls here. A lot of people got in relatively early on the Bitcoin thing. And then, of course, the bubble bursts. It goes way back down. Every single network reports how it's over. Crypto is dead. We hear it over and over again. Then you see this big rise all the way up to, what was it, 69,000 or something like that in 2021. And then, you know, FTX happens and we get the whole thing all over again. Bitcoin's dead. Beginning of this year, January 23rd, Bitcoin was all the way down to $38,505. And it's been rising. And, you know, look, both candidacies at some level kind of came out a little pro-crypto-ish, but Donald Trump really hit it hard. It was like, I'm in now. He was not really a crypto guy back in his first term. In fact, he said he liked the dollar better and thought it was kind of fake money. Now has turned around on that and has been a real advocate. His son is a real advocate for it. Of course, Elon Musk is on that bandwagon as well. And to just show you how fast this is happening, we had this story printed out from this morning when they did the initial prep for the show. Bitcoin rises above 80,000
for the first time, which is legitimately incredible. I mean, I can't even describe how incredible that is. However, as I look right now, as we're doing this, 87,141 Bitcoin is at right now. It's mind-blowing, and 100,000 is now in the conversation. It could happen. It's really a thing. Maybe 90,000. Obviously, it hit 80, hit 85 already. An absolutely incredible situation. And like, it seems like, you know, sky's the limit right now. Now, look, we've seen these happen before where it rises up and then we have a big crash, and that may very well happen again. But it's hard to imagine this not being around for a long time, especially with the way that we're printing money. I mean, there's really very few conversations that happen in our politics right now that talk about stopping the spending, stopping this printing. It seems to be an unending printing machine. And whenever that's going on, you have Bitcoin sitting over here being like, hey, there's only 21 million of us. Probably about a quarter of those have already been lost. Like, there is a prime, precious resource that cannot be grown in when it comes to Bitcoin. And it continues to rise, an incredible development. And if you happen to get in early, if you happen to be listening to us back in the day when Bitcoin was like $200 and we were talking about it on the air and being like, you know what I would do is buy a little Bitcoin. I wish I bought a lot more Bitcoin. I'll tell you that much. But if you happen to be one of those people and you're celebrating today, thank God. Thank God you're here. And, you know, it's funny to watch this election and how it played out, because a lot of the people who were early on cryptocurrency have risen to levels of wealth that they were able to make a big difference in this particular election. Crypto is already changing the world, and there's a lot more to come. Anytime in life that you have to make a big change, it's hard, especially when you're coming to buying or selling a home. I mean, this is one of the interesting things I've heard. You know, you read these stories of people who got into, you know, cryptocurrency, Bitcoin early, and they've raised, now they made so much money and they don't want to sell because they love it. But they're like, I can buy a house with this now? Like, should I do it? Like, at some point, I guess you have to spend it, right? Or not necessarily a purpose in having it, unless you're just going to hand it down, which, of course, is another great way to go. But what I would say here is when you got a chance to move, if it's Bitcoin money or if it's just in normal terms of life, you got to go with a real estate agent that you can trust. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com is the place to go to find that person. You don't want some ordinary agent that kind of, or maybe someone who just kind of does this on the side. You want the best in your area. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com, they can help you get the best price, whether you're buying or selling your home. You don't want to waste your money, whether it's Bitcoin or whether it's just good old American currency that's probably going down in value every single day. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com is the place to go. The name kind of says it all. It's RealEstateAgentsITrust.com, RealEstateAgentsITrust.com. Earlier today, I mentioned potentially donating to Rishi Sharma's efforts, which I think are really, really noble and just fantastic. But if you don't want to do that, there are other options like Kamala Harris's campaign, which I had understood it was over. But Kamala Harris fundraising is going toward a recount. Now, if you donate $41,000, it will go to the DNC, but the next $3,300 will go to the President's recount account. This, I guess, is not necessarily for her recount, but it's going to go towards some House recounts. So she's still trying to raise money. She's $20 million in debt. It's absolutely incredible how much money she blew through. Now, Dean Phillips is back in the news. He says his voice was ignored, but so were tens of millions of Americans. By the way, Dean Phillips is like the star of this election. He was the one that called it out. He was the one on the Democratic side with the balls to say, Joe Biden is way too old. We better do something about this. Everyone freaking ignored him. And he comes out of this, I think, looking really, really good. In fact, this has been like out of the clubhouse, the lead excuse for the Kamala Harris campaign. Oh, if she only had more time, or if we had a primary, then they could have beaten Donald Trump. Well, Dean Phillips was saying we should do this from the beginning. I'm glad he didn't get his way, frankly, because I'm glad the Democrats failed on this. But if you want to look around and find somebody who is actually telling you the truth, he was the only one who would actually admit it. All this stuff that they say later, they all knew about these problems. That Joe Biden should have dropped out. Well, Dean was saying it at that time, and you should have actually listened to him. Trump is pressuring candidates for the Senate GOP leader to fill his cabinet right away. That's the big thing for Trump. He just wants to get through this with recess appointments. So he doesn't have to go through the whole Senate process. this may be something that he will get that done, I think, because all these people are going to have to vie for him. The only way, though, and look, the three candidates, you might not like any of them. All of them have their issues. Rick Scott, I think, is probably the best one. But the only way Rick Scott's going to win this is if Donald Trump comes out by name and says, Rick Scott, I need him to win. That's the only way he's going to win, because there's way too much power in the other two, which is Cornyn and Thune, both of which would be terrible, though please don't make it John Cornyn, anyone but John Cornyn. Finally, Elise Stefanik has been named the ambassador to the UN. That brings up an interesting House situation, would leave a House seat vacant for about 3 months, could be a really big issue. And then Trump has announced Tom Homan, former director of ICE, to serve as the border czar. So lots of good things happening on that front. We'll give you more details coming up. Well, we got through an election season with some coverage I think you could be pretty proud of and probably enjoyed. If you didn't like the mainstream media coverage, if you liked what we did here, join us on Blaze TV, blazetv.com/stew. blazetv.com/stew is the place to go. Get on board. You can also join us on YouTube and on Pluto TV as well. Anywhere you can, we'd appreciate it. We'll see you tomorrow.